This is a reading from Chapter 9 of Thorin the Dragonslayers by K.V. Johansson. Thorin the Dragonslayers is published by Cybertooth Incorporated in 2009, and is copyright K.V. Johansson, 2009. Chapter 9, in which the goblins are surprised. After we had said farewell to Thuya, who was fully recovered, and eating all the grubs and honey and fish she could get to fatten up again, it didn't take us long to get back to the mountains. Now that I knew exactly where we were going, I could find all the shortest ways, and I knew mountain paths that even Kossifa hadn't seen before. Less than a week later, the sun came up one bright morning, and there we were, climbing up from a little stony valley to a dark crack in the mountain wall above us. We'd had to leave the horses and even the mule in the valley, because we were on narrow ledges, sometimes jumping from one jutting stone to another. Thuya's ancestors must have been as sure-footed as chamois or izzards, which can beat a goat in a climbing contest any day. Our plan was simple. Sneak in, take Wormbane, sneak out. Goblins sleep during the day, so we thought that if we could be careful and quiet, it should be easy. At first, it was. We huddled together at the narrow crack in the mountainside. It was just barely wide enough for a bear. Both the humans drew their swords, and Rufik stepped in, with Kossi right behind him. "Wait a minute," I whispered. "You can't see in the dark." But they were already gone. "We need a better plan," I muttered, and I followed them. The crack slanted downwards for a dozen yards before it opened out suddenly into the cave, a dead end with no other tunnels or rooms off it. The walls curved up to meet overhead. In the center of the floor there was a big block of stone, almost like a table. I couldn't see what was on it. The table was higher than my head. The air was filled with a sickly, rotten smell, and the cave was lit by an eerie blue glow. My fur prickled. The glow came from a blue flame that floated over Kossifa's left hand. "It was too dark to see," she whispered defiantly, when she saw me looking at her. Her eyes gleamed blue, but then, in the blue light, probably mine did too. I shook my head. She looked away. "Wormbane," whispered Rufik, and he took a step towards the table. I grabbed him by the belt and stopped him just in time. A goblin, huge for a goblin, probably taller than me, was sprawled on the floor right in front of the prince. "Look down," I whispered. Rufik did, and he gasped. The cave was full of goblins, 20 or 30 of them. It was easy to see why the prince hadn't noticed them at first. Their wrinkly skins were gray, and so was their scraggly hair. They wore kilts of uncured rabbit skin, which was why the cave stank. They had dragged in some heaps of grass and leaves to make themselves nests, and their bronze cauldrons sat on a crooked ring of stones over a mess of ashes and charred sticks. Gnawed bones were kicked into the corners. Even most goblins would be ashamed to live like that. "Careful," I whispered. Rufik nodded. He pointed at Kossifa and then at the tunnel, meaning she should stay where she was, guarding the way out. She nodded. Rufik stepped carefully over the sleeping goblin, creeping like a cat. I followed him and pulled myself up onto the table. There was the sword Wormbane in a black scabbard, with its long belt wrapped around it. But there were two other things as well. A book, with a red leather binding that had a bird design stamped into it, and a spear. My skin tingled with sorcery, but it was quite different from the uncomfortable prickling from Kossi's blue light. This was a clean, fresh sort of tingle, like fizzy spring water. And I could hear a faint musical sound, almost like someone whistling cheerfully far in the distance. I reached out a hand, carefully. The hilt of the sword was very simple, no jewels or gold. The pommel, which is the knobby bit at the top of the hilt, was a silver disc, like a big coin on edge, with a coiling dragon etched into it in black outline. The grip, which is the part of the hilt you hold, was polished bone, and the quillons, the cross pieces at the bottom of the hilt, were silver, with more black outlines of snaky dragons. When I touched the pommel, cool white sparks danced over my fingers, but when I pulled, the sword didn't budge. I wasn't the right one. "There's a spell on the table," I whispered to Rufik. "I think it's to protect the things. I suppose the sword might rust, or the leather rot, and the book get moldy otherwise. And it must stop the wrong people taking them, or the goblins would have burnt the book and been using the weapons by now." "How do we break through the protection?" he asked. "I don't think we have to. I think it recognizes that the time has come." The faint music was changing, as if drawing nearer. "What's that?" Kossifa asked. "Even the humans could hear it." "Oh, dear," I said. Whoever had made the spell hadn't been expecting goblins. There was a sound like birds and flutes and drums, cheerful and wild, and a sort of shiver in the air over the things. A little dust rose, and then all was silent, for about a heartbeat. "Spies!" shrieked a goblin, just as Rufik reached out and picked up Wormbane in his left hand. Thieves! Stealing the treasure! We're not, I shouted, over all their screeching and roaring. The sword belongs to the prince. We're going to take it and go away and leave you alone. They didn't listen. Goblins aren't reasonable at the best of times, and these ones had been living here too long, gloating greedily over a treasure they couldn't use. The big chieftain snatched up his stone axe and swung it at Rufik, who had Wormbane sheathed in his left hand and his own sword naked in his right. The prince parried the blow with Wormbane and kicked the goblin away, but the goblin whirled and struck again. This time the prince swept off his head, and after that I didn't have time to see much of what anybody else was doing. Most of the goblins were keeping back, pelting us with stones and bones and other rubbish, but not all of them. I had a glimpse of Kossifa, her back to the wall, and her sword flashing silver in the blue light, fighting two goblins with long stone knives, before a goblin grabbed me by the ankles and dragged me from the table. As I fell, I seized the spear, and as another big goblin struck at me with a stone hammer, I twisted aside and stabbed her. I didn't have time to feel scared, or relieved, or sorry as she died, because another one bit me about then. There was a dead goblin at Kossi's feet, and another by Rufik, and then the second goblin fighting Kossifa fell back, clutching a bleeding arm. He screeched, "Hey, it's the goat guard girl, the one with the wolf servants!" And they all started screaming and yelling and trying to hide behind others in the corners, pelting us with rocks and bones. "Get the book, Kossi," I shouted, "on the table!" I whacked the biting goblin across the belly with the wooden shaft of the spear and guarded Kossi as she darted in to grab the book. "Now run, Rufik, go!" We all ran. Rufik was first into the tunnel, because he was closest then, and I was last. I had the shortest legs. "Bully Big Head's dead," a goblin yelled behind me, and I'm sure I heard another goblin say, "Good riddance." But that was when Kossifa whirled around, her blue flame growing into a tower, climbing the walls of the narrow crack. Her eyes were blue, not like Rufik's, but an unnatural glowing sapphire blue that wasn't Kossifa at all. "Leave her alone, Epiphagus," I shouted. But these were the mountains, not the wild forest, and I had no great power here. "Don't listen to her, Kossi!" I don't think Kossifa even heard. She was muttering words, gabbling them together in her hurry, ending with a great shout, "Coruato tectum!" And the roof of the tunnel collapsed behind us. We stumbled out onto the narrow ledge, coughing and choking from the dust. The blue flame had vanished, but Kossifa's eyes still blazed sapphire. She would have run straight off the side of the mountain if Rufik hadn't caught her. She stared blindly at him, and her gaze turned to me as I tumbled out onto the ledge. "Old thing," she said harshly, "leave me be." I snatched at the jewel, which was hanging outside her jerkin now, but she raised her sword. "Kossifa!" I shouted, as Rufik grabbed for her arm again. "Kossifa!" She blinked, and for a moment I thought I heard that music again. Just the faint, cheerful whistling. I almost thought I knew the tune. Gregi swiftly flying. In a strange way it was coming from the book, like a scent rising from its ancient pages. Kossifa gritted her teeth. She snarled, "Get out of my head, you miserable old heap of bones," and fell to her knees. We both crouched down beside her. Rufik still clutched her sword arm, but after a moment she dropped the blade and looked up. Her eyes were grey again, wide and frightened. "That wasn't," she stammered, that wasn't, I didn't mean to do that, it wasn't me." All up and down the mountainside, the tough little flowers and the dwarf trees were dead, withered away, or even crumbled to dust, and not a bee or butterfly moved. I reached with the spear and prodded a delicate heap of bones that might have been a songbird. I was not sure, because they turned to ash as I looked. Kossifa went white. I've never seen a human turn so pale, and her eyes were like two bruises in her face. "No," she said, and then, "Darby, the horses!" "They're fine," I said. I could see them down in the valley, looking up at us. Probably they were too strong to be affected by the life-sucking jewel, so far. "The tunnel's blocked," Rufik said quietly. Kossifa flung herself to her feet again. "The goblins will die in there. There's no other way out." And she turned back to the tunnel, yanking on the fallen stones with her bare hands and throwing them behind her. We all felt the same. Killing enemies who were attacking you was one thing. Leaving them to suffocate or die slowly from thirst was entirely another. Rufik and I didn't waste any words. Rufik didn't bother going down to the mule for his spade, either. This wasn't like the bear's den. It was just a rock fall, and if we were lucky, not a big one. I thought we were probably going to be lucky, and the goblins luckier. I could hear stones rattling and clattering on the other side of the blocked tunnel, and goblin voices yelping. "Idiot! Not on my foot! Get out of my way!" "Not that one! What did I tell you? Let me do it!" Kossifa grabbed the first scrawny goblin arm that came reaching through the hole we made, and she pulled. The arm was followed by the whole goblin. As soon as he was free, he screamed, "Wolf girl!" and ran away. The rest poured out behind him, squinting in the sun. They fled up the side of the mountain like spiders looking for dark holes to hide in. Silently, we climbed back down to the valley. That was a reading from Chapter 9 of Tori and the Dragon Slayers by K.V. Johansson. And you can find out more about the book on K.V. Johansson's website, www.pippin.ca.